Strategy and Insider, exploring future trends and their impacts.
Hello everyone and bienvenidos to a very special episode of the Strategy and Insider podcast. Recording from sunny Spain, I couldn't be more excited about this conversation. And that is because today we're at the center of where healthcare is delivered directly to patients, namely a hospital, and more precisely, the University Hospital Rey Juan Carlos in the south of Madrid. It is also one of the clinics already showing what the future of healthcare can actually look like by using AI, robotics, but also digital infrastructure to transform how hospitals operate every single day. And to discuss how this works in practice, I'm really thrilled to be joined by someone who sits at the intersection of medicine, technology, and hospital leadership. So please welcome Dr. Jorge Short Apellanis. Jorge is part of the digital leadership at Quirón Salud, which is one of Europe's leading hospital networks with more than 150 medical centers across Spain and additional facilities throughout Latin America, which are part of the broader Fresenius and Helios group. He is a trained physician who previously served as the deputy medical director at the prestigious university hospital Fundación Jiménez Díaz right here in Madrid. He has also led three university hospitals for Quirón Salud as regional manager in the Greater Madrid area. And to me, this is really kind of a rare combination of clinical expertise and digital leadership that gives him a unique perspective on how technology is reshaping patient care from the inside out. And by the way, I also learned that he's a former rugby player that makes it all the more exciting. So, Jorge, thank you so much for having me here in Madrid. It's really great to be with you here today.
Thank you very much for coming and taking your time and having a chat this morning with us.
Yeah, so you present us here a very nice weather, of course, but also a very well-organized hospital, I have to admittedly say. But before jumping anywhere, nearly everyone these days, and me including, seems to be wearing some kind of digital health tracking device, whether it's a smartwatch, it's a fitness band, or it's even a smart ring that I'm wearing today. You now being also a physician, turning digital health leadership into your day-to-day living and job, I'm really intrigued to ask, do you personally use one of these gadgets, devices to monitor your own health? And if so, has it changed the way you think about patient data yourself being in the practice there?
Well, to me, I think it's not so much about getting the data, which I think it's more than necessary, but I think everybody is going to gather their all information. If they're not doing so right now, they will in the following years. I think the key point is not all these gadgets that they exist, but how you put all that information all together, where you can handle all that information all together, and if there's something you can do with all this data together. Inside this hospital and inside our company in Quirón Salud, we managed to create our own patient portal 12 years ago, when actually it was at the same time as the opening of another public hospital we take care of in Villalba, we created the patient portal. The patient portal is quite amazing right now because it's over 9.4 million people in Spain are using it. And wow. Actually, if you take a look at it, it would be, I don't know the percentage of Spain, but that would be what? Nearly 17% of the population would be using the patient portal. Why I'm saying this is because, it's great to have all these gadgets, but then you've got to have an app that can integrate all these gadgets, and you can have an app that can integrate all this data from yourself inside your clinical report. And this is exactly what the patient portal does, because inside all the information you can have, you can do all these prevention campaigns, but also if you're having any chronic disease or any acute disease, it can tell you all about it. It's growing fast. I think data is always good to have it, but again, you need to know what to do with this data. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago, it was very interesting here in Spain, in one of the national newspapers, there was a news between prestigious doctors that said about, are we getting too mad about gathering all the data we're having? Because, you know, I've walked 10,000 steps, my heartbeat is not above 90, I'm sleeping enough hours, blah, 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 blah.
So doing everything right in the end? Yeah,
yeah, or too right.
Too
because,
right.
Because the thing is, you don't have to be obsessed. Mm-hmm. Because the trouble is, if you have the information and the information does you good, that's good. But if the information does not do you good mentally, well, take a look at it. But answering your question, I do have a smartwatch. I do measure my steps, my heartbeat, all the times I sleep, etc., etc. But the last thing I was saying exactly, you've got to take it slowly, I think. And what it's more important is to have something, someone that can analyze all this for you. And inside Quirón Salud, we had the patient portal that it's actually the best tool we've got inside the company.
Thanks for sharing that. And can I just ask on that patient portal that you're having, is this kind of an open source where you can kind of upload an Oura ring or Whoop information or whatever kind of data there is that is kind of
you can do whatever. I mean, you can download it. You could download it right now and you could put your information you need and you could start using the app. It's great because it's not just an information tool where you can know your appointments, you can know all your clinical reports. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see your last CT scan, your electrocardiogram. But imagine you're coming from another country or you're coming from another hospital brand or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can start doing photos to your last clinical reports and automatically it uploads the information and it analyzes the information you have inside your app. This app has been doing a great evolution in the last years. It's not only that we've had the information, but what I was saying is it's a communication tool between your doctor and nurse and the patient. And this communication tool is not need to be at the same time. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, imagine you're a diabetic patient. You're going to be a diabetic patient all your life. It's
for
a chronic disease. So do you really need to come to the hospital three times a year if you're doing okay? Or could you communicate with your doctor, communicate it again with your insulin bomb or whatever kind of tool you have to introduce yourself? I mean, we've created a different way about treating and taking care of the patients, and much more direct and much more personalized.
And I can very much relate to that. So it's also kind of being there for patients when they really need help, but also keeping patients outside the wards if they don't need to be around, right? And making way for other patients more in need for seeing a doctor in the end. Mm-hmm. So did you get any feedback from users of that patient portal? I mean, what are they kind of saying about it?
I mean, since the beginning, I mean, something inside our company, inside Quirón Salud, we take very much into account what the patient says and thinks about. Mm-hmm. We do Net Promoter Score, NPS, of every single thing we do in hospital, in the emergency room, in the appointment room, in the surgery room, in hospitalization, and in every single tool. We do Net Promoter Score about, of course, the patient portal. The Net Promoter Score of the patient portal is above 70. It's really, really high.
It is.
And it's not only about Net Promoter Score and what the patient thinks about it's about the percentage of use of this app, because it's not only that 9.5 million nearly of people do have the app, but the question is, are they really using it? And it's above 75% of the patients that have the app that have been using it in the last 3 months. So it is an app that's been really used. So
seems like really in demand.
Yeah.
Can I just dig a little into your career path, which I find really remarkable? Mm-hmm. You're a trained physician who led several prestigious hospitals and is now heading and leading the digital transformation with colleagues for one of Europe's largest hospital networks. Mm-hmm. So what drew you from practicing clinical medicine into digital leadership? Was there kind of a pivotal moment in life where you realized, well, tech could really fundamentally change how care is delivered or anything alike?
Well, it's something that probably everybody that's listening to the podcast will know. In the next 10, 20 years, health is going to change much more than in their whole history. No?
Yeah.
This is something we know. I like to say that we're in a crisis, health crisis, health system is in crisis, but this is not something new. Probably in the 90s, they were also saying we're in a healthcare crisis. But what I do think is the moment of a cultural transformation. I think digitalization, it's the catalyst for that cultural transformation. I think digitalization should be, or is, or at least in our company is, the catalyst or the tool to do a cultural transformation. The real thing is that patients are growing. Patients' illnesses are growing. More chronic diseases are coming up. Patients are older, and that's why chronic diseases are going higher and higher. The tools we have, the sources we have, are limited. This is something for real, or at least in Spain or in Europe, it's much more. So if we keep doing the same things as we did 20 years ago, we're going to crack ourselves.
Yep.
So that's why a cultural change is being done already, because a patient has already changed. I was in another meeting last week with different managers of different companies, nothing related to healthcare, but we were talking, and when was the last time someone looked at his app for a bank account? 2 hours ago, that same morning, the day before. But when I asked, when was the last time you actually went to your bank? When was that happened, no?
5 years ago?
Well, yeah, exactly. or now, people are buying stuff with their mobile phones. There's less and less people actually going to the shops, no? Actually, there's lots of brands that are promoting this. You go to Zara, you know Zara, it's a Spanish brand, Inditex, and they're closing down shops because they are going much higher in digitalization and in app. But when I did the question, when was the last time you looked at an app of your health to see how they're doing? There was silence in the room. And I asked the question, is your bank more important than your own health? So I think people are willing to transform. People do want to transform. People have transformed in every single sense in their lives. So I think health has to have a big important bit in this. I had another example, hematology, just an example. Hematology patients, of course, an hematology doctor has to see 15 patients in a morning, okay? Most of them are chronic diseases. Most of them is people that the hematologist already knows. And maybe that consultation could be done any other way than the traditional way. Why? Because the hematology really needs time for that first patient that has or is going to be diagnosed of a lymphoma, and that patient really needs that time.
Dedication.
Yeah.
So
that the doctor can have that dedication to that patient, the other type of patients can be treated something else. So I think that in my case, managing this is really passionate. I mean, because the whole world is changing our surroundings. And I really think we can do things differently. We can do things better for the patient so that the patient can be sustainable, the whole system in the future. Here in Spain, we've got a public system. I love the public system in Spain. I think it's one of the best things this country has. It doesn't matter which illness you have, you will be treated of that illness. I've been working in the States. I did a fellowship there. A system completely different. And I think the system in Spain is, if it's not the best, it's one of the best in the world. But so that the system can be sustainable in 20 years, changes have to be done. And I think that's in the road where Quirós Salud is doing pretty good.
Right. And a prerequisite for that future of health to really happen, obviously, is digitization. Mm-hmm. And as you rightly described, digitization kind of is omnipresent in life, mm-hmm. in everyday life, but also in healthcare. Mm-hmm. Given that you started, you mm-hmm. personally, but also Kion Saluth, started mm-hmm. this journey towards digitization way earlier mm-hmm. than many others. What is mm-hmm. the one thing that you would advise health leaders, hospital leaders globally, when they embark on their journey towards a more pronounced digitization level?
There's been three people that have changed completely the way of doing things differently in uh-huh. healthcare. Juan Antonio Álvaro de la Parra, who is now the COO of Quirón Salud, Marta del Olmo, who is the regional manager of public hospitals uh-huh. in Quirón Salud, and Ángel Blanco, who is the CIO of Quirón Salud. They were the ones that started 15 years ago to change things. Uh-huh. And one of the very good things they did and that we've kept up these years is we've been working as one, as a team, from the beginning. Engineers, mm-hmm. mostly IT engineers, doctors, and management team to work as a team from the beginning to have real solutions to real problems. This is, we've got whatever the problem is, how can we solve it? And if from you from the beginning work as a team, the tool you will manage to create will be used from the medical team from the beginning. Mm-hmm. If you create a tool without counting with the people that most know about the clinical problem you have, you will have much more problems to implement it. For example, if you want to create a clinical pathway for a trauma or orthopedic surgery, and you don't take into account the orthopedic surgeons from the beginning, it will be much more difficult then for them to be using it. So I think the key point, the most important point, is to be united as a team, as one. And doing that, at least for us, it's been one of the keys of success.
And I mean, we're now here in Spain. In Spain, the Spanish healthcare system is really frequently recognized as one of the most efficient ones in Europe. Mm-hmm. And innovations like electronic prescriptions, online appointment management, also widespread usage of telemedicine mm-hmm. are kind of an everyday life reality here. Mm-hmm. While countries like also Germany, where I'm from, were still working on the rollout of digital patient records. Mm-hmm. What do you think is Spain's kind of secret sauce that you are having in order to make digital health innovation really working the last couple of years?
I think we started a few years ago, more than 10 years ago, to do all these digital innovations. But I think there was something that really changed it, and that was COVID. Mm-hmm. COVID marked it was differently. The tools, we had them. We had already the tools, but the moment these tools were a great boom was from COVID. In COVID, I think lots of patients understood that they could have the same quality medicine as they had before using their phones or different digital tools. I mean, in the end, what a patient needs is an answer. A patient may be frightened or may be scared, but mm-hmm. what a patient needs is an answer. The way you give that answer, probably the best solution for a patient nowadays, is as quickly as possible. Of course, this doesn't mean you do not need to see a patient personally. Mm-hmm. I gave an example before in hematology, in a lymphoma or a more chronic disease. But again, being able to do lots of appointments with your mobile phone makes us be much more personalized medicine for these patients that really need the time to do so. Yeah. So I think people in Spain have understood this, and people in Spain want this. But again, I don't think this is much more about Spain. I think this is worldwide. I mean, everybody in our days is using their mobile phones for so many things. Well, why not health?
Yeah, no, very true. And once you laid the foundation, in kind of digitizing your end-to-end patient journey in your hospital. Mm. I would love to talk a little about artificial intelligence.
Okay.
Because I know you're a strong advocate for AI's role in clinical practice, and also here in Cairns Salúth, you are already deploying AI at scale from what I've seen. And this is also visible here in the hospital, mm-hmm. in Juan Carlos, where I had actually the honor to get an exclusive tour through the facilities earlier. Mm-hmm. But I would love to dig a little deeper, if I may.
Yep.
Beyond diagnostics, how is AI actually changing the day-to-day management of your hospital, both in a sense of patient management, clinical day-to-day management, as well as kind of the more management of the hospital side? Can you give some concrete examples how you're deploying this?
We created a tool 2 years ago called Scribe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Cassiopeia Scribe. In February of 2024, a paper in the New England Journal of Medicine was published. Mainly this article, what it said is that AI would be really good in medical routine mm-hmm. if there could be any tool that could transcribe a conversation between a patient and a doctor,
mm-hmm.
because this would be able to save lots of times,
yeah.
and what doctors hate about doing, and that's administration mm-hmm. stuff. So we got this article and we started working with it. And we created a tool that can transcribe a normal conversation between a doctor and a patient only with his mobile phone or tablet.
Some sort of voice recording.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But what it does is, inside our system, Cassiopeia, we developed our own system 14 years ago. Actually, the first hospital that started with Cassiopeia was this one, in Rey Juan Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's ours, we're able to do updates and create new tools inside it. So we, the engineers, head by Daniel Blanco, who was the first engineer that started with the idea of doing this, we managed to do a tool that could transcribe all the information between a conversation and put it inside a clinical report automatically. Not only does that, but it can listen to the conversation. Mm-hmm. If I'm a doctor and I prescribe you medication, it also collects this and sends it automatically. If I ask you for some tests, a blood test, an MRI, a CT scan, it also gets that and it does it automatically. Of course, the prescription, medical prescription, and the tests have to be validated for mm-hmm. security later on. But what this made was it changed the way about treating patients, because mm-hmm. you don't need to have a doctor typing in all the time while he's talking with the patient. He can just be having a normal conversation. Actually, we've changed some of our appointment rooms, and they're not normally a desk because that's like a huge barrier, but mm-hmm. they're round tables where the doctor and the patient can just have a normal conversation. The patient can see their test or in a screen like this one, the one we are having here, or inside your tablet or whatever. This was a huge boom. Actually, the tool was ready on June 2024, and we did some tests during that summer. And on September on 2024, we started to launch it in all the group, in the 57 hospitals, in every single specialty. I don't know by heart the numbers and figures now, but more than 4.5 million appointments have been done with this system.
Digitally supported them.
Yeah. And emergency room, 1.5 emergencies have been treated this way.
This is super interesting that you have it, because I heard about, obviously, and read about and seen it Amazon Transcribe Medical, mm-hmm. That Amazon invented in the US,
mm-hmm.
but to have a European version mm-hmm. Made from doctors for hospitals and patient conversations mm-hmm. is super interesting. Now, if this is used by doctors, right,
mm-hmm.
they are obviously having hopefully a better conversation, which upends mm-hmm. the quality of the conversation with the patient. It may also save them quite a lot of time in terms of efficiency mm-hmm. gains. Would you expect that your doctors then have more time for one patient to have a better conversation
exactly.
with? Or is it seeing more patients in the given amount of time?
No. The doctor sees the same number of patients.
Mm-hmm.
So what they have is more time for each patient.
Right.
And again, coming back to one of the previous questions, When we did this, we did different groups for every specialty because the clinical report of a traumatologist is not the same as a cardiologist. And the transcription will also be different. It hasn't not only risen up the quality of the conversation between a doctor and his patient, but it has risen up very much the quality of the clinical report. And this is not silly because if you have a better clinical report, patient has more information. Other doctors that need that clinical report and might not know the patient have more information. And for other tools that we're developing in reading the language inside the clinical report will also be better.
And I mean, with an AI implementation in healthcare, probably a little different to probably other parts of life when doing shopping and the like, it is obviously crucial to diligently balance innovation with patient safety. Clinicians need to trust the tool they are using, and patients need to trust that their care is not being delegated just to an algorithm, but somebody knowledgeable looking at it in the end and validating and contextualizing it. What do you see is the key element, or are the key elements, for successfully and safely integrating AI into clinical workflows so that everybody can trust in the end?
We've been very careful to what the tool really does and doesn't do. The tool only transcribes the conversation between a patient and the doctor. This is very important for the patient to know. I mean, it doesn't record this and it doesn't go anywhere. It's actually destroyed after the transcription has been done. This is first thing. Second thing, patient safety, or the quality of patient safety, depends very much of the quality of the clinical report. This is very important. For example, I've got lots of friends that are ophthalmologists. I don't know if you've been to an ophthalmologist before.
Yes.
I mean, yes, okay. If you read a clinical report of ophthalmology, it's full of letters without knowing this. And for maybe someone that's not a doctor, it's impossible to read your clinical report from an ophthalmologist. All this with this transcription system has changed. It's clear language for the patient. And again, safety for the patient is much better because other doctors will understand much better. And you as a patient will understand much better your clinical report and the recommendations and treatment you might need.
And here in Karen Saluth, I see that you're really at the forefront of innovation. That's why I would also like to jump onto advanced robotics because you also have the Da Vinci surgical system as one of very prominent example here in your houses. For listeners who may not be that familiar with it, this is one of the most advanced surgical robots worldwide that has been designed by NASA engineers and that allows surgeons to perform really minimally invasive procedures with extraordinary precision in the end. How has that introduction of surgical robots basically changed and hopefully enhanced outcomes for patients at your hospitals?
Well, very much. We've got thousands of examples. Actually, in this hospital, we've performed more than 3,500 patients have been operated with Da Vinci robots until now. And besides Fundación Jiménez Díaz, both of these hospitals, we have three Da Vinci robots in each one. We're the first hospitals in Madrid to have so many robots. The company, Quirón Salud, is betting on this system because it's much better in lots of technical surgeries to do this system. Why? It would be better for probably to a surgeon to answer this question. But mainly, to use robots, it means you need a smaller surgical area to get in it. So this is much better for the patient's recovery. This is great for urology. This is great for otorhinolaryngology, because this way lots of things can be done through the throat, not needing to cut any of the bits in your neck or face. It's much better for and much less invasive for gynecology and for general surgery. I know thoracic surgery, again, if you need to get something from your lungs, is much less. So mainly, Da Vinci robot, what it makes is people to be operated in the same time, because once the doctors know how to use it, they use the same time or less, with a less invasive system. And that means the patient will recover much more quickly. For example, in this hospital, we're starting to do emergency surgery medicine with Da Vinci. we're the second hospital in Spain that starts it. It's a bit more broader in the United Kingdom, but for example, a patient with that needs a cholecystectomy because the patient has a cholecystitis, by Da Vinci, the recovery 1-2 days versus 7 days in hospitalization. So again, in terms of sustainability of the system, it's better. Of course, if you only take a look at the actual price of doing the surgery, yes, I can assure you that it's much more expensive. Yeah. Right now, a surgery with a robot than a surgery without the robot. But again, it's priceless if you take a look at the global process of the patient. Number of days he has or she has to stay in hospital, recovery, mm-hmm. and of course, the patient experience about being operated one way or the other. Here in the hospital, we've got the best doctors, I would say, in Europe using robots. We've got doctors coming all over the Europe and north of Africa to get trained here in different fields. And it's actually an honor to be in a hospital with such a high quality in this system.
Yeah. And it's also because when we entered the building, you nicely showed us around, obviously. Yeah. You also commented on one of the leading architects here in Spain has actually been designing this and also kind of the concept behind it, right? Mm-hmm. So probably you can share a bit because I was also impressed that other countries like even China that are also at the forefront of innovation are now coming to Madrid to your hospital to get inspiration here.
Yeah, it was done by Rafael de la Hoz, who's a great architect, a really famous architect, and the idea or the concept he wanted when he built the hospital was to do it very simple. So that
a patient would,
so that because he had the feeling, or I've listened to him about the explanation, that lots of times when you get into hospitals, it can be a real nightmare getting to where you want to go. So if you take a look, when you get in the hospital, it's like a road, a main road, and from the main road, you can quickly access to every single bed in the building.
Another area where Kiran Salud is also very active in is research. You're holding yourself as a group 30 patents. You have more than 1,000 active clinical trials ongoing. So basically my question, I would say, is twofold. First, what are the most promising projects your research teams are currently working on? And you can give us kind of a sneak peek into that. And secondly, I'm also curious how you leverage AI for R&D, because you have a lot of the data available digitally. Mm-hmm. You have AI capabilities, it seems, in-house. What are the advantages that you're already seeing from this on the ground with regard to speed, precision, or even also making better choices in the end?
First, I think part of our goals and parts of our score and our soul is not only about healthcare delivery. Of course, this has to be the main activity a hospital has to do. But for us, there's also two things that are really important, because if not, we will not be better. And remember, one of the things we thought at the beginning is we have to do things differently and we have to be better than what we used to be. And these two things are teaching and research. We truly believe about teaching, and we've got all types of universities, all the residence program, obviously, but of course, research. Here we've got El Instituto Fundación Jiménez Díaz. It's one of the best research institutes whose leader is la doctora Ayuso. And I think this has been one of the key points in the last, because this also attracts doctors. Mm-hmm. Obviously, doctors are willing not only to do healthcare delivery, but also about doing research and teaching. And this is a key point about it. One thing that has been game-changing also in the last years is all these innovation tools you were mentioning before, all the ways of doing things differently in management style have been published. We've published all these innovation ideas in clinical prestigious papers that, by the way, they've done different bits inside their publications only for healthcare management and innovation. So we've published in BMJ and Catalyst of New England Journal of Medicine and Lancet and, and so many of them. And it's one of our purpose to keep publishing in these papers.
That's very nice to hear. And probably zooming out a bit, Kieran Saluth is also obviously part of the Fresenius and also Helios Group, which is a network that spans Germany, Spain, but also Latin America, including a growing presence that I learned also in Colombia. How does that international structure benefit patients on the ground and clinicians, obviously? Is there kind of a deliberate strategy that you're transferring best practices from one hospital to the other, from one country to the other? Because you're doing a lot of kind of research and experiments in some of the places that other physicians, but also the patients ultimately should benefit from. What's your thinking on that?
Obviously, yeah. Yes. I like saying that diabetes is exactly the same in Berlin than in Madrid and Washington. The illness is exactly the same. Maybe 30, 40 years ago, when the pharma industry wasn't so globalized, maybe treatments could vary a bit between them. But nowadays, there shouldn't be a big variation. And again, we're doing, of course, sharing the projects we're doing here and in Germany is double benefit for all of us. And we've started to do different programs of doctors from Germany that are coming to Spain and doctors from Spain that are going to Germany. And again, and if we manage, because we are doing special groups of working all together, if this was one of the key points of success years ago where engineers, doctors, and management teams could get onto it, well, why not doing all these teams between German and Spanish teams? This way will be the at least most interesting company in healthcare delivery in Europe and in the world.
So we actually started off this episode discussing the growing relevance of health tracking devices for many people, including obviously ourselves, as we shared, which is part of a way larger transformation in healthcare systems towards a more preventative, personalized system and one that is less disease focused. At the same time, we're at a hospital, which is kind of the embodiment of disease care in a traditional healthcare system. In your view, how will the role of hospitals change in future, given that healthcare more and more happens also outside of designated locations like clinics and doctors' practices, rather integrated into our everyday life? Because what I also learned is that on average, throughout the globe, we're spending about 30 minutes per person with a doctor annually, which is kind of maximum where bug fixing happens, right? But not where healthcare is catered for. What's kind of a changing role for hospitals in this?
This is probably the most important point of the whole podcast. It's what we said there was, it's not about digitalization on its own. It's a healthcare cultural change. We cannot do individual acts. I mean, we cannot treat you as a patient only when you come in hospital. If we do this as a system, we fail.
Yeah.
We cannot treat your stroke. We can, obviously, but that shouldn't be our goal, or your heart attack. We have to do prevention. We have to treat you when this can happen. And we have to treat you after you leave hospital, because we have to treat the whole process. We cannot treat just an individual act. If the system only treats an individual act, the system will fail because the number of cases are rising up. So for us, we change this. And we are always seeing lots of talks, laughing a bit, because we're always talking about before, during, and after. But it's true. I mean, we've done loads of prevention campaigns. We have all your information. We try and treat you before you come, while you're in hospital, and after you leave. This is the main point. And actually, digitalization, what has been useful is to be able to do this. Because thanks to digitalization, we've been able to treat you before you come, once you're home, and after you leave hospital. But this is the key point inside our strategy inside Quirón Salud.
And in order to make this a reality, what we believe, and I personally also strongly believe, is that there will be increasingly kind of a convergence of stakeholders within and into healthcare. Because if we really want to cater for patients being, or people, not patients in the first place, but people being prevented, then you would need to entrench healthcare into their homes, their way to work, at their workplace, wherever. This is where healthcare, preventative healthcare, needs to happen, which means that you would need an ecosystem kind of where a hospital is collaborating with diagnostics companies, with retail consumer companies that are producing food and delivering at home, where you're having pharma companies and others building up solutions. And this ecosystem is then embedded into everyday life, into 24/7. But this would mean that stakeholders, traditional healthcare stakeholders, but not so traditional healthcare stakeholders, converge their interest around the very person, right?
Fully agree. And I'm sure that's what we're going to be seeing in the next 5 years or less, 2 years, because things like that's already happening. We created our own ecosystem surrounding around Cassiopeia, which is our own system, and the patient portal. This was the first point. Of course, there's lots of tools right now being done and delivered by engineers, companies, startups, companies that have a great idea, that develop a great idea, and that we have incorporated inside our system. The only thing for us is that it has to be inside Cassiopeia, inside our system. Why? Because if not, we would have 100 apps and we only have to have one app. But I fully agree that different stakeholders are already in the market. And the thing you said about food, I think that's going to be one of the key points in the future. I'm sure about it. Well, it's already the present.
Thank you so much, Jorge, for sharing your expertise and giving us this really incredible look inside one of Europe's most innovative hospital networks. It was really great to meet you here in Madrid.
Thank you very much for coming, for taking your time. It's been a great pleasure. I liked very much the conversation. I hope it's useful. And thank you very much again.
And thank you to everyone for joining us today. I really hope you liked this conversation as much as I did. And please do not forget to rate our podcast on the platform of your choice, because your feedback and support is what keeps us going. Until then, take care and stay safe. Or as they say here, hasta pronto.
Strategy made real.